I'm Eddie Merckx. You listen to the Bicycle Show on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Yes, this is the Bike Show on Resonance 104.4 FM. With me in the studio, Kieran Yates and Bill Chidley. Buffalo Bill, welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks very much, Jack. Nice to be here in the bright new Resonance Studios.
You know it.
Isn't it fabulous? Fabulous new studio.
Well, we're back for another season of the Bike Show, and highlights of this season are a special look at a Moulton bicycle. Well, my Moulton bicycle, which I've just recently acquired through the miracles of eBay, waiting outside in the rain at the moment. It's a beautiful specimen, 1963 Moulton Deluxe, beautifully restored by a guy called Steve. And I'm going to be interviewing Alex Moulton with any luck, and speaking to a few Moulton enthusiasts out and about. We're also going to be taking a long, hard look at the cult of the fixed-wheel bicycle in hipster scene in New York City and London. This is a scene that's soon to be history when Moultons really catch on and take off on the streets of London. You heard it here first on The Bike Show. We're going to be looking at the history of bicycles at war. We're going to be taking a look at the impact of the 2012 Olympics on the City of London and on London cyclists. And we're going to be investigating the issue of riding a bike while pregnant. And if that wasn't enough, we're going to have a new sound art interpretation of Alfred Jarry's famous essay, The Crucifixion, considered as an uphill bicycle race, and that's featuring the magnificent Peter Blegvad. But part of what I want to do on this show is take a look back over what's been a pretty hectic summer for cycling. And I've got with me two guys who have done an awful lot of cycling over the summer in one form or another. Kieran, if you're an attentive listener to the show, was making his first attempt of the Paris-Brest-Paris ride, which is kind of the ultimate in endurance riding. How was that, Kieran? Did you make it?
I did make it. It was grueling, tiring. I came back with several aches and pains. Bits of my body didn't work for a few weeks. My fingers still tingle a bit. But other than that, fantastic achievement and a great thing to have done. So, yeah, pleased to have done it.
And Bill, nothing quite as heroic as the Paris-Brest-Paris.
Massive respect. Absolutely massive respect to Kieran for doing the Paris-Brest-Paris. That means that you are officially a hard man of cycling. Massive.
Or
massive
head case of cycling.
Yeah.
All right. Well. But what's the soft man of cycling been getting up to, apart from printing T-shirts?
Getting fat. I've got really fat. I mean, I haven't really been doing much cycling at all. I've been doing a lot of blogging. That doesn't keep the weight down. I've been doing a lot of... I've been involved in quite a few events over the summer. That doesn't keep the weight down because of the beer, obviously.
What kind of events?
Well, mostly messenger events. Basically mostly messenger events.
Well, to listeners who don't know who Buffalo Bill is, he is a former chair of the London Bike Messengers Association, and more importantly, writes the Moving Target zine, which is the world's most useless messenger zine on the web. You've got a pretty big following now, haven't you? You've got some hefty Google juice.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who, yeah.
Is there a crossover between the bicycling and blogging?
I mean, there are a lot of really cool bicycling blogs. I mean, I know your favourite is New York City Bike Snob.
Well, I've been enjoying that. That's quite well written.
It's very well written, and it's one of my favourites too, just because the guy is so rude. So unbelievably, it's far ruder than I would ever dare to be. But I also noticed that it's anonymous as well. It's,
right, okay. He seemed to be making a living out of it, from what I've heard.
I don't think so, no. I
mean, advertising just, and stuff like that,
Yeah, I mean, you don't make a lot of money out of blogs. If you want to get rich, you don't start a blog. I mean, you know, penny a click. I mean, if you get 400 click-throughs a month, what was that? It's like a pint.
So what's been the most... the most talked about thing you've written about over the summer?
Well, the Fakinger articles regularly gets the most hits on the sites. That seems to be the thing that people like talking about the most. You know, are they a good thing? Are they a bad thing? I'm not a Fakinger. You're a Fakinger.
These are people who kind of look a bit like some bike messengers look.
Allegedly. I mean, I don't really want to get into it here.
Okay, let's not get into it.
But then I would say the next most popular thing is the HGV stuff, because I do cover the HGV cyclist deaths, and every time that someone's killed, and I report about it, I get a massive spike in hits, because what you find is people obviously looking for the person that.
Well, the sort of citizen journalism is, in a sense, covering things which don't actually get properly covered in the mainstream newspapers, and people look to sites like yours to actually find out what's going on and get a level of detail and reporting that they won't find elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the technical information is buried. So if you're looking for blind spot stuff, a lot of the technical reports on the so-called blind spot is buried in European Commission, and I like to think that I've managed to highlight some of the issues around it. So that's another thing. But then, you know, the big story this week is the Rafa roller race, which was at the weekend and was absolutely fantastic.
It was good, was it?
It's absolutely fantastic, yeah. I mean, they had a huge display board. There was a boxing ring. There was pom-poms. There was cheerleaders. The male messenger team won, obviously, which gave me a lot of pleasure, even though I had to give them 4 T-shirts.
All right.
Well, it's the reason why they won, obviously. Because they knew
they came last,
and we were humiliated publicly, and this time we came first, partly because I offered them a free Moving Target t-shirt each, not just one between the whole team. They each got a Moving Target t-shirt.
Right,
so it wasn't all the Rafa stuff that they were after.
It wasn't the Rafa stuff, no.
They weren't interested in that at all. No. It was the Moving Target t-shirt. Although the Rafa stuff... although the Rafa stuff was very nice.
Kieran, tell us a bit about what it's like to get the T-shirt of I Have Ridden the Paris-Brest-Paris ride.
Well, that's practically all you do get for completing Paris-Brest-Paris, that a T-shirt and a key fob-like medal. What's it like? God, first 24 hours, it was like it is outside tonight, really wet, windy. I rode straight through 24 hours. So set off at 10:30
at the night.
And carried straight through to a place called Ludiak, which is about 280 miles further down the road on the way to Brest. And I did something that you're not supposed to do. I slept for a very long time there. Most people avoid sleep on Paris, Brest, Paris, but I decided I would maximise my sleeping time. So I slept from about 10:30 through until 5 the next morning, then potted around having breakfast, watching people come in still at Ludiak and collapsing on the floor, which was quite dramatic at the time. And then set off towards Brest and really felt the pain in the morning when I set off again. That was probably the hardest bit, getting back on my bike.
To come back again?
Well, setting off after that first sleep,
right, okay,
off... getting your body going, feeling all the discomfort.
And this is after how many kilometres?
That's probably about 450, 470 kilometres. I think that was the worst bit for me, just getting back on the bike for the first time. And
so with that's with two-thirds still to do, yeah?
Two-thirds still to do, yeah. And something like, I must have had about 55 hours to do that two-thirds in at that point. And I got into a nice group of... into a nice group with some Basque riders, and they were great fun to ride with because they would just zip along. They had whistles and they were sort of scooting through every junction, blowing the whistles, stopping the traffic practically, and just zooming ahead. And
a bit like Bill, really.
Yeah, it was an, well, I did see Bill the other night.
Whistle in your raver days.
Continue. Yeah, so I was in this Basque pace line, and we made good speed all the way to Brest, where we were welcomed by a pipe band, or a pipe player rather, not a pipe band. It was a solo pipe bagpipe player, of all things, in Brest. And then it was time to go back, very quickly, in fact. I think at that point, I must have been well over 45 hours, so I'd gone through half my time. And... yeah, you have a big hill to get up, both before going into Brest and coming out of Brest.
What's that called? That's
the Roc Trezeveille.
That's legendary, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not that steep a climb. It's probably like a Yorkshire Dales climb, but sort of after, 350 miles, you kind of feel it.
Yeah.
And then it was on to the next night, and it got grim again with the weather, and... stopped off, it must have been about 1 o'clock in the morning, I stopped off at this tiny little village called Saint-Martin-des-Prés, and all the villages, they kind of, that you pass through, you get the folks out on the street cheering you on, and it's probably, for the amateur cyclist, it's the closest you can get to being in a big sporting event where you have the roadside kind of enthusiasm, and that's great. But in some of the villages, they set up all these stalls, you can get cheap croissants, cheap coffee. In Saint-Martin-des-Prés, they had a huge tent outside the bar, and you went in there, it was all steaming inside, and they had benches laid out, and they sat you down, and they just said, what do you want? Soup. Have some soup. And they brought over these great big dog bowl sizes, dog bowls of soup. And so I scoffed that down, and then it's, do you want somewhere to sleep? And they'll usher you into a little back room with foam mattresses all over the floor. I didn't take them up on that one because I wanted to hit the road, but several people did. I made it back to Loudiac and had a sleep on the floor, as most people do on Paris-Brest-Paris, if they're not sleeping in a ditch at the side of the road. Probably about 2 or 3 hours there, and then back on the road again and chasing for time once more, wet, windy, getting into groups of riders. Not suffering too badly. I think the tiredness was starting to hit on the third day more than any kind of physical pain. Again, it's that every time you get back on your bike, you're sort of fighting to get comfortable on it for the first hour or so. And then I must have made it as far as... There was a place where they had a secret control just after Loudiac. And I got into that control at about 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, and this American guy came stumbling in, and he just started saying, God, I wish they'd let us know that they had these secret controls. I just slept 300 yards down the road in a ditch all night long. He wasn't too chuffed about his night's experience. And it was just a case, you just go, and sort of, The final night, you go through these villages and you just see bodies strewn at the side of the road. It's like there's been a gas attack when all the local villagers are cyclists and they've just collapsed at the side of the road. And people passing by will shout out, L'envers est tué, and it's just madness. Final day, heading towards the last control. The most spooky thing about the final day was the number of people who had... soft neck braces on, and this is basically because the neck muscles go after you've been riding for so long, and they get something, I think it's called Schramer's neck or something like that. I saw one guy who had innovated his own solution to this by attaching a bicycle in a tube from the back of his helmet to the back of his saddle to keep his head upright whilst he's... So there are desperate measures that people take to complete this event.
Extraordinary. Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about your preparations. But before that, here is Patrick Field, who I don't know if you saw him along the way and is recumbent, but here are his thoughts about what it's like to ride the Paris-Brest Paris.
Fantastic. It's like being a saint. You know, you ride your bike in England and people want to know why you're doing it. There has to be a product. Is it for charity? Whereas you ride your bike in France and it's like you're mad. It's beautiful. It's a mixture, I think, of the Catholic religion, you know, suffering and obedience and just doing something because you can, because it's beautiful. And also their sort of spiritual affinity with modernism. You know, the Paris-Brest originally was the birth of the modern world, because that's when the Michelin company went from being a joke to being the thing. You know, in the 19th century, when people's idea of a road was a load of stones and their idea of a tire was an iron hoop around a wooden cartwheel, and some joker said, I know, let's put a bag of air round the wheels, people just laughed. They thought it was preposterous. It was like the geeks who in 1978 said, one day there will be a computer in every home in the world. You know, it was stupid. And then Charles Terron won the first edition of the Paris-Brest in 1891 in 72 hours, and the world changed.
And so how long did it take you, the times you've been doing it?
Well, the touring limit is 90 hours. And we go on a much more circuitous and hilly route than Charles Terron. Charles Terron just went down the desire line, I have to add, on stony roads and a 19th century bike. So we go on the pretty way. 90 hours is the touring limit. I think I did 86 hours the first time, 84 hours the second time. Last time I did 78, 39. And
so positive splits.
Definitely. This year, I'm hoping, and it's, well, it's ambitious. I want to do 71.59.
When you're riding along in that race, is there a lot of camaraderie? Do you go in a group? I mean, or are you quite broken up by the time, you know, you've gotten underway?
Initially, if you leave in the big bunch.
How many people are doing it at the start?
Maybe about 4,000. So you're just a river of crazy international overexcited humanity, and you look ahead and you can see a river of red broken by horizons reaching into the distance. You look over your shoulder and you see a river of white through the darkness broken by horizons, and you thunder through the first night, and then slowly things get broken up. But you know, there's always a rider in the distance ahead, a rider in the distance behind, different groups. You know, some people like to ride fast and see how fast they can go. I think the limit is something hilarious, like 50 hours. You know, that's the record. Then other people like to ride fast and take good rest. And some people like to ride slowly and continuously. What you can't do is ride slowly and take good rest.
So what do you do?
I'm a slow, steady rider, and I think that suits recumbents. Recumbents, you know, they in theory they're more efficient, and with a strong rider, you know, the atmospheric resistance is less, so you can go potentially faster. But it's a festival, you know, it's a social event. I plan to keep doing it. You know, this year is a kind of a crossover between me getting old and the bikes I'm riding getting faster and faster.
So heading towards being the Jimmy Savile of the Paris-Brest Paris.
Oh no, it's an old man's game, and you see lots of old guys, you know, who they say to you, you know, is this your first time? And you say, oh, yes, or no, it's my second time. And then they hold up six fingers, and you just look at them and think, yes, I shall live forever. It's very beautiful.
Well, that was Patrick Field. Kieran, are you going back for another one?
Well, I've got 4 years.
You've got 4 years to get ready.
Contemplate that one. My immediate reaction afterwards was yes. At the moment, it's kind of no, because I've not been cycling much since. But then 3 years down the line, Who knows? So, and like Patrick says, it is a great festival, a beautiful event. And as far as, I think the most impressive thing for me, besides the reaction of the French public, it was just the internationalism of it. You had cyclists from China, Japan, Brazil, Costa Rica, people from all over the world. It was absolutely fantastic in that respect.
So knowing what you know about what it took to get you ready, prepare now, if you can, for Bill, a kind of crash plan for the next few years to get him in a state to do more than 20 seconds on some rollers. Well, you've already confessed.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of miles, plenty of miles every year. And then a lot of people say, oh, you've got to do the SR series the year before, which is the series of 200, 300, 400, 600 kilometre rides. I didn't do that. I just did it this year, the whole SR series. So I did my SR series in Paris.
When you say SR, you mean Super Random Air?
Yeah,
series,
super. Yeah, that's right. Besides that, I did a lot of riding over the winter, quite a bit of fixed gear riding over the winter, and then,
oh no, not fixed gear.
Yes, for purely training purposes this time, just doing the Super End on Earth series, and that was about it, really. I didn't really do anything from probably late May through until actually going to France, apart from my regular commute, which is about 20 miles a day. So
there's hope. What would it take for you to do? Would you really seriously consider that?
No, I mean, I seriously considered doing it. But this year, it just never really happened. I mean, the last time I kind of gave myself over to cycling, which was the year that I was doing the Marmot and all the rest of that, I kind of split up with a girl I was seeing, and that kind of stayed with me.
But Kieran's just got married. Congratulations, incidentally.
You. Yeah. Thank you. Well, that might kind of limit my future.
I mean, the trouble with getting really good at cycling is it takes up so much bloody time.
It takes a lot
of
dedication, and I think...
And you need a very understanding partner,
yeah,
I think.
So much better to focus on the world's longest skid, who's best on the rollers, and who can bunny hop over a traffic warden.
Well, those kind of things only take a few seconds.
Exactly. So, well, yeah. Turning quickly to the World Bicycle Messenger Championships.
Which was in Dublin, yes. Well, we kind of, in London, because the pre-event, it was here in London, London's Calling. The London Messengers organised that. We kind of had... some of the guys went to the post-event, which was in Glasgow. So some of the guys had 2 weeks of it. So what happened was that the Thursday before, the weekend before the Dublin thing, all these messengers came over and they started racing on the Thursday. Then they raced on the Friday. Then they raced on the Saturday afternoon. Then they did a roller race on the Saturday night. Then somehow they managed to get up and get down to Herne Hill and did a track race at 10 a.m. Then there was all the longest skid stuff. Then there was the foot down when everyone was too drunk to actually do anything. Then there was a bit more drinking. And then they got up the next day and left from London Fields at 9 a.m. and rode to Dublin. So then they arrived in Dublin on the Thursday. Then there was a race on the Friday, another race on the Saturday, a roller race on the Saturday night. You could kind of get in a picture.
So it's quite hectic.
And there was vast and continuous consumption of beer. I don't know how they do it. I mean, they call it the breakfast of champions.
Beer. Yeah. Well, we've got a piece of music hot from the recording studio, and this is the very great Deadly Treadleys, whose latest whose latest album is going to feature, when it's out, a track entitled Roller Race. And here it is.
Get up! they're in the ground. Advantage sits on the right. Speculation evolves into general consensus that the red flag is rolling, it's rolling faster tonight.
Well, I think that's conjuring up what I remember of the only roller race that I've ever visited, which is up down in the pleasure unit on Bethnal Green.
Yeah, we're up to Rollerpalooza 9 now.
I'm losing count, isn't it? It's probably time that I threw my hat into the ring, isn't it?
I think it is.
Can I go on a Moulton?
No, you can't go on a Moulton. No, you can't go on a Moulton.
You know that
there be a Moulton class for the whole event?
The fastest. Wearing tennis socks, weren't you, Jack?
Yeah. Well, I have to give other people an advantage to keep up with me. We're getting towards the end of our half hour. It's just gone by in a flash. In a quick word, what are you going to be doing over the winter, Kieran?
Resting, mostly.
Resting, yeah. And blogging.
Blogging, yeah. Getting even fatter, yeah.
And what stories are you going to be breaking over the winter?
Well, I don't know yet.
Boris Johnson's dirty secrets of Mercedes-Benz abuse.
The Boris Johnson thing is really interesting because everyone thinks he's going to be great for cycling, but the guy is a knob. He's not going to be good for cycling at all. So we'll probably be following that, but we'll have to wait and see what idiocies he comes out with.
Well, thanks, gentlemen, both, for coming on to the inaugural bike show of the winter 2007 season. And next week is a books special, just in time for everybody's Christmas shopping, with George Theohari, who's the author of the newly published Cyclist Companion, Guy Andrews, editor of Ruler magazine, and Graham Fife, who's one of Britain's best writers about cycling, who's written several books now, including a history of the Tour de France and his own memoir of a life in cycling. So tune into the bike show Monday evenings, 6:30, repeated again on Saturday at 6:30. And next up is Guitar Man, I believe. This is Resonance 104.4 FM. My name's Jack Thurston. This has been The Bike Show.